too boasty and confident. What are your score predictions for the game?
That's a weird noise, wasn't it? I'm going to go...
Was that in Morse code?
It's the biggest week of Reading season as attention turns to a last eight FA Cup tussle with Crystal Palace on Friday night. We'll look at what lessons Brian McDermott may have learned from Saturday's 2-2 draw with Fulham and what team we might expect to see at Huddersfield tomorrow night. The mailbag throws us questions on Mikel Antonio and Gareth McCleary, plus plenty more on the Tyler's Den podcast episode number 88. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of the TylersDen.com. I'm delighted to be joined this week, firstly, by deputy editor Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Good evening. The M4 tried to stop me being here this evening, but my desire to talk all things Reading Football Club saw me through in the end.
Absolutely. The M4 tried to stop me this morning as well, as it took me 2 hours and 10 minutes to get to work. So this show prep didn't nearly happen. It nearly went from an unprofessional joke of a podcast to an unprofessional-er joke of a podcast.
I was going to say, just how unprofessional can we make it sound today?
Good question. It was almost a nil.
And on that note, our guest today...
Yeah, our second co-host is Steve Curtis, Royal Hoops. Welcome back off the bench again, Steve.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Becoming a regular fixture on the show, good to see.
Yep, you keep scoring those last minute winners.
Do you feel better now? Do you feel in the groove now you've had a few more starts?
Yeah, more professional.
It's like the Dennis Raquels, but without quite a thuggish haircut.
Oh, there you go.
All the tattoos.
A very neat quiff going on there. I like that.
Mm.
Yeah. You like Ola John, you've done your pre-season training, you finally got up to full fitness, and now you're ready to complete 90 minutes of podcast action.
Yeah, I'm well up for that. I'll bring the magic.
90 minutes, I'm only booked in for 60. I might have to call it a day. I don't think my ticker can take that much.
Well, we'll see how this one goes. As we said, plenty to talk about, including that 2-2 draw with Fulham. But just before we move on, a very big thank you to everyone who has taken part in the crowdfunding campaign so far. It is very, very much appreciated for myself and the whole of the team. I said, hopefully you can hear all the benefits on the show week to week and know that your money's being spent wisely. There's still much more we'd like to do, though. So if you have got just a couple of quid, it starts at $2 a month, which I think is about £1.30 at the moment. So if you've got £1.30 to as a little tip for us, like you were leaving a tip jar at the restaurant, that would be very, very much appreciated. Also, a couple of other podcast announcements you might have seen on your feed. Our interview with Joel Hufford, former BBC Radio Berkshire head of sport. The first of a two-part interview went up yesterday. I very much encourage you to go and check that out. It's a completely standalone show, so if you can't stand my opinions, then by all means, go check that out, because it is mostly Joel. And also, we will be interviewing former Reading striker Stuart Archie Lovell on Thursday night for a show to go up a bit later on in the month. So if you do have any questions, get them into us at thetylestend@gmail.com.
Can we officially call Archie Lovell a Reading legend?
I think he is.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I would go so far. Steve shrugging his shoulders there, the younger generation.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Respect your elders. I saw the man score a hat-trick against Swindon, damn it. And for that reason, he shall forever be a legend, regardless of that, you know, penalty miss, which we'll skirt over. Anyway, speaking of penalties, let's talk about one that we did score, but it wasn't enough in that 2-2 draw with Fulham.
View from the Tylehurst End. Recapping this week's Championship action.
So Reading's Championship winning run comes to an end against Fulham, 2-2 draw, a game where we fell behind early on to a Moussa Dembélé goal. We fought our way back in to get 2-1 in front, a Hal Robson Kanu penalty and Hal popping up with a header as well to make it 2-1. But early in the second half, Fulham draw level with a penalty of their own from Ross McCormack, and we have to settle for a point despite throwing the kitchen sink at them. Brian had this to say on the game. He says, well, it means we stay undefeated in a good while. We take a point, which takes another position at the table, so we're grateful for that. Two sides doing the best they possibly can today. That's Championship football for you. We were unfortunate not to go 3-1 up, and I think that would have been game over then, but they were hanging in there, and fair play to them. They've got themselves their goal, and like us, tried to win the game late on. We wanted to take the 3 points, but I'm pleased with everything that the boys are giving me. We have top-class players and staff here, top-class people. There's a good camaraderie with the fans now, and we're trying to play, pass the ball, and get results. Today, we take a point. Do you agree with Brian there, chaps?
I don't necessarily agree with him that they were trying to win the game late on. I thought there was only one side that was really attempting to make anything of the game late on, although I do have to say I think we started very slowly again. I mean, I think the referee was actually the first person to put a tackle in on a Fulham player about 15 minutes through the first half. And, you know, they thoroughly deserve the lead. And it is not so much recently, but certainly at the start of Brian McDermott's return, it did look as though we were starting very, very slowly in games and teams were sort of coming after us. But I thought after that, I didn't really think we deserved to be 2-1 up going into half-time either. I thought both goals were against the run of play, sort of, but then, you know, a stupid mistake and a cracking bit of play puts us 2-1 up. And then, yeah, going into the second half towards the end of it, I thought there was only one team that were trying to win it, but I mean, a point was probably a fair result in the end, I think.
Yeah, after the game you took a point. I think before the game you'd said anything less than 3 points is kind of unacceptable, but having been at the game and seen it and how it all played out, you're like, okay, fine, I'll take that point. We weren't really in danger of losing it, I don't think.
But no. And Ryan said, oh, well, you know, they were trying to win the game late on. I didn't think so. I think Fulham were very, very happy to take their point. They have been struggling this season. They're down at the bottom. They just needed, a bit like Reading a few weeks ago, they just need the odd result to make themselves feel safe. Mm. But once McCormack got that penalty, it was really a case of shutting up shop. There was a great infographic on the experimental 361, Ben Mayhew, who does sort of a game chart based on probability of when you're going to score a goal based on, you know, chances and pressure. Fulham's chance of scoring a goal just flatlined after they scored that equaliser. Well, so I thought that equally summed it up. But let's go back to the start again. One change, Paul McShane out injured, Anton Ferdinand comes in. Was the skipper missed, Steve?
No, I don't think so. I think Anton Ferdinand, you kind of know what you're going to get from him now. And so even if Paul McShane is out injured, then you don't really care because you've got Ferdinand to come in. I'd probably actually still rather see McShane and Ferdinand paired at the back, but while you can't do that, I think Ferdinand coming in and partnering Cooper, you know, you've got no fear or worries there. He's experienced, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I think the biggest compliment you can pay Anton Ferdinand is you never notice him in games. He just quietly gets on with the job. On Steve's point, I do think McShane and Ferdinand would be the best partnership right now, but I can see what Brian McDermott is trying to do in sort of bed in Jake Cooper, give him that experience, because we know Anton Ferdinand's contract's up at the end of the season. I don't know whether he'll be given a new contract, although if we're losing Hector as well, then it might be that we need to find a new centre-back as well. But I think in terms of missing McShane, I think, you know, the three centre-backs in the way we're going to play them at the moment, you can't say he was too big of a miss, no.
No, and I completely agree with you. I wrote exactly the same Artalasen.com match report. Best thing about Ferdinand, like you said, you didn't notice him at all. He was just, he did his job, he got on with it, and he had a very classy performance. But unfortunately, that I don't know whether the change had much to do with it, but Fulham's first goal comes from a set piece again. Slack marking at a corner. How often have we seen it, chaps? And Moussa Dembélé, who we had all picked out as the big threat, along with McCormack. I don't think now, you know, we weren't going out on too much of a limb to do that, but we picked him out as a danger man. And the amount of space he's in from a corner is just unforgivable. I've watched the replay a couple of times. I think it's Michael Hector that loses him. I think Hector gets caught ball-watching a little bit, or maybe it's just a case of somebody else didn't pick him up. But whatever the case, he's in too much space.
And I think Alhabsy can do a lot better as well from that chance. Official player of the month, Ali Alhabsy.
Yes, the club's player, not ours. We'll come on to that in news bites, but yes, he won the club's player of the match.
I seem to remember last time he was named the club's player of the month, he had a shocker as well, didn't he? So maybe we should stop doing that.
I think it was October, November time, and I think it was just before we lost to QPR possibly, yeah, so around that time. So, but yeah, I mean, you know what you get with Ali Alhabsy again, he'll make a mistake, the odd mistake. Maybe he just doesn't like defending from corners.
Quite possibly. Well, from that point on, it really didn't look like we were creating much. Again, the same old problems of getting those chances from open play were creeping up. But Reading absolutely gifted a penalty, Steve.
Yeah.
Hal Robson-Kanu running down the right-hand side of the penalty area. The ball looks like it's just going out of play. I mean, Hal's making an effort to get it just to desperately keep the ball in. And he's brought down by a man who I described as a pasta dish at the
Arrabbiata.
Weekend. Yeah,
a vegetarian pasta dish.
Yes, on the live videos you may have seen on the Tyler Stent's Facebook feed. I'll talk about those more a bit later. But Mr. Pasta Man, hauls down Hal Robson Canoe when he has absolutely no need to. It's a gift of a penalty.
Yeah, that was really stupid of him. I think he's quite an experienced international as well. So to do that is just a total rookie error. I don't know why he's done it. And Robson Canoe probably feeling on top of the world like that. He's like, hey, I got a free goal here, really. So, yeah.
Classy penalty as well.
Mm. Yeah, well, it reminds me a bit of how Blackman used to take him. He used to do it cool, calm, little slot once the keeper had decided where he's going. Yeah.
Sign of a man in real confidence, Johnny. And I noticed that Charles Watts has put forward a case for him to be maybe player of the season. Can you see that case growing? I can't believe I'm saying these words.
Would it be the first time in history that we've had two players of the season then leave in consecutive seasons, seeing as Adam Federici won it last year?
Well, didn't Lafondra win it the season before?
And
it was Jordan Obita.
It was Jordan Obita. So, you know, that would certainly be interesting if we're just losing all our seemingly best players. But I think it's the same problem you have last year, really. There's no one who's consistently had a run in the team or consistently put together performances. You know, we've had very streaky players of the month. If you look at our own votes, we had Nick Blackman for the first 3 months of the season, I think. Then Ollie Norwood for 2 months of the season. And now Carnuta for 2 months of the season. So I think it as much points to a lack of consistency and talent in the Reading squad as the fact that Hal, yeah, to be fair to him, is probably having two of the best months of his Reading career.
Yeah, 3 goals and 6 assists I think he's got now. Mm-hmm. He gets a second goal in this game as well. It comes from a lovely, lovely little ball in from Ola John, who himself had been played in really well by Michael Hector. Really good little team goal for Reading there. Hal putting on the finishing touches to give us that 2-1 lead. I thought up to that point, though, Steve, that Ola had a bit of a quiet game.
Yeah, Sim said in the further reading that John kind of doesn't do much defensively. And so I think up until, you know, Reading were kind of tussling with Fulham, so you didn't really see him get on the ball very much. But obviously when he is attacking, when he does get on the ball, he does stuff like that. Which at first, when I first saw it, from where I was sitting, it looked a bit like it was a shot himself. But then obviously after the replay, I was like, oh, okay, that is a really good ball across the goal.
He'll say it was across.
Some people, Johnny, are saying that, you know, he does leave that left-hand side exposed. Are you happy to make that sacrifice in games?
Well, I think it's something that can definitely be coached into him. And I think certainly in the first half, you could see that Fulham were targeting Jordan Obita down our left, their right. Often, you know, playing the balls in behind him or just sort of swarming over to that side of the pitch because they knew John didn't have much defensively. In terms of Ola John, I mean, you know, I've sort of been a bit sceptical of him because I think he's been all flash and not much productivity. But you can't argue with what he's done in the last couple of games against Charlton. And then obviously against Fulham as well. I think, you know, he's finally starting to show the potential that he's got. Can he keep it up for 90 minutes every game over a whole Championship season? You know, I guess we're going to find out whether he can do it for the next 3 months. But he's like the McCleary or the Kebe of old. Every time he gets the ball, the fans go, come on, what can you do?
You
need that in your team.
Yeah, you need it. Quite simply put butts on seats.
Yeah.
Isn't, you know, as exciting as someone like a Joby McEnough was, he wasn't very exciting.
Kebe.
He is a very much a Kebe type figure, and that can only be a good thing. It's just a shame. You know, I was chatting with Charles Watts on the podcast extra, both of us sort of in agreement really. It is very hard to see a scenario where John stays. Are either of you two more confident they'll get a deal done?
No, because I think either way, if he's not, you know, this is just a little few games where he sparks something and then he goes off again, you're not going to see Reading try and sign him. And then if he has a worldie for the next few months, then they're not going to be able to keep him because other clubs will come in. So no, I don't think that's going to happen.
I mean, you know, the manager's always going to want to say, you know, of course I want to keep this play here. He's not going to say, well, he's off at the end of the season, so enjoy it while you can. I see Brian said, similar things about how Robson Kanu today, I think. So, you know, obviously you've got to pay the lip service. I don't think it will be possible to keep him here, but you can't doubt that he's a very exciting player who at the moment is probably about the only part of inspiration that's in the Reading team.
Yeah, if this scenario came up in the summer then, say Benfica turned around and said, OK, you can have Ola John, it's going to cost you £3.5 million,
no,
and you're going to have to give him a 3-year deal. Would you take the deal on the presumption that it'll probably be at least, you'd say, 3/4 of his transfer budget? Is he that good?
No.
Well, I don't know. I'm tempted that you'd want to take a gamble on him. You know, he's played for the Netherlands, he's played for Benfica, he's still young, he's got a lot. going for him. And you think for, you know, 3.5, you offer that to the team in the top tier, they'd bite your hand off for it. So I think Reading, you know, if they want to get up there, they need to take a few risks on players that may or may not make it. But he's proven before that he's got the quality to make it. It's just stringing it all together.
Yeah, might need some of that rumoured Russian money to be able to bring him in to the club. Only a rumour we talked about on last week's podcast and on the main edition, and much more in depth as well on the podcast extra. So if you're just catching up with that rumour, I very much encourage you to go listen to Friday's podcast extra. But finishing up on this game then, Reading come out at the start of the second half on fire, really. Jan Kermagant goes through on goal, just slots wide, and at that point Reading are so on top of the game. And then Jake Cooper just gets into a foot race with Fredericks that he's never ever going to win. You could see this penalty happening from a mile off, and sure enough, Cooper clatters into him. The referee's got a very easy decision to make, and McCormack doesn't make a mistake from the spot. Two slightly dodgy games in a row now for Jake Cooper. Johnny, are you at all concerned? Would you be tempted to take him out of the firing line?
No, not immediately. Like I said, I can see what Brian McDermott is trying to do in bedding him in, because he is the future as much as anything. He's probably one of the first he's one of the first choice centre backs for next year. So you've got to give him that opportunity. The only way he's going to learn is by being on the pitch. If I'm honest, when I first saw it, I thought it was a little bit harsh, because I thought Fredericks was already going down before Cooper sort of made contact with him. But you can see how it looks. I think there was probably more contact than Christian Benteke had on Sunday.
That's not hard.
No. So yeah, but you know, I think you've got to give Cooper the benefit of the doubt at the moment.
To give him his due, I think with Fredericks, he is so quick. There is no kind of situation where Cooper is put in that scenario and he comes out of it well. You know, he either gets rinsed and just kind of doesn't do anything and then Fredericks has a chance, or he does what he does. You know, he's not going to come out of that. And it's just one of those things that seems to happen in football. You either give away a penalty or you give away a golden chance, and it's one of those.
Yeah, I mean, I'd slightly disagree. I didn't think it was going to be a golden chance. I think the best he would have had was a hard shot from an angle. I think maybe if you've got slightly more experience in that situation, you just sort of stand firm and either just let him go past you, and he's at full stretch. So, you know, he's got a difficult chance for a difficult angle to make. But it's an experience thing, and this is just it. How many times have we had on this podcast, oh, I want to see X youngster play? This is what you've got to part with. If you want to see the young players get given a chance and develop in front of your own eyes, you've got to put up with their growing pains. It's either that, or you send them out on loan and hope they go and make their mistakes for Barnet or for AFC Wimbledon or for Plymouth, you know, like someone like a Craig Tanner's doing at the moment. So you can't really have it both ways. And like you say, Johnny, I wouldn't take him out of the firing line just yet. I think he's learning. I think as long as he wants to play, I mean, it's a slightly different scenario if Brian's a good man manager. Hopefully he'll be able to see. And if there's a sign that, you know, he's a bit mentally worn down, I'm sure Brian would give him that rest. But as long as he's hungry and keen to play, I think you give him as many chances as possible. Give him, you know, we've got, what, 11-odd games left this season? 12? Is it 12? I think we're down to 12.
Well, it depends how many games we get in the FA Cup, doesn't it?
True. Well, in the okay, we clear the FA Cup, we could have up to 14 games then. 14, 15 games.
We will have 15 games, plus all the extra time and penalties that come with it.
Oh, and of course, I'll run to the playoff final as well, once we've won all those
that
games.
Tiny sliver of green on the experimental 361 chart, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Just about see it.
Yeah, you could do a little tiny sliver, but yeah, you give him every chance you can, because you let him make his mistakes this season when it's not really going to matter. I know some people want to see McShane and Ferdinand, but I think you've got to keep one eye on the long term as well. Just before we move on then, Jan Kermagant, as mentioned, he added that miss at the start of the second half. A couple of headers not going his way either. A little bit of a step backwards from that game at Charlton, Steve.
Yeah. I mean, he looked good, I think. Apart from the shooting, it sounds a bit funny to say. As a striker, he looked all right, except he didn't get any really good shots on target. But he's, for that lone striker role, I don't think he suits it. He can do a job, but you'd much rather see him paired with someone else. But then that means you'd then have to make a sacrifice elsewhere in the team to bring back a Vidra or a Raquel's from the start. You'd have to drop Norwood or Hector or Quinn to make that 4-4-2. And I don't think McDermott's in the mood to risk that at the moment.
Yeah, we'll talk about Norwood a little bit later on, because we've got a question in the mailbag about it. But Raquel's as well, Johnny, didn't make a fantastic impression coming off the bench this time.
No, he spent more time on the floor than actually on his feet, didn't he? You know, he changed the game in the last home game when we won 1-0, but he wasn't as impressive on Saturday. It's a shame. I mean, hopefully, you know, you have seen signs of potential from him, but I think it's just going to take a little bit of time. And obviously, you know, when you're coming on as a sub, you want to make an impression, you want to make an impact, and maybe he's just sort of trying too hard at the moment.
Yeah, it's very, very early days from him, and it's a sort of performances, again, with like a younger player, same with a player newly into the league, you're just going to have to battle with him for the time being. We've seen he's got flashes of potential, but to expect him to be that dynamic match winner game in, game out, it's unrealistic. So hopefully, as I said, he'll get more time. I imagine he'll get a start at Huddersfield, just give him 90 minutes. But yeah, I suppose we should
see that.
Yeah, we should leave that discussion for the Huddersfield game for a little bit later on. So the result leaves Reading one place higher in the table. They're still 11 points adrift of the playoff places, though they have got a game in hand, but it's an awfully big task to claw that back, as I said, with just 12 games to go. I think realistically you're looking at probably nine wins. Mm-hmm. And I think we've, you know, struggled to put that together in the last three, four months. So yeah. In fact, we haven't even won that amount of games under McDermott, so it would take something special, but we'll see how it goes from there. Right, in the meantime, now that's out of the way, let's move on to News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So, as we mentioned at the very top of the show, just in case it had slipped your mind, we are in FA Cup quarterfinal action on Friday against Premier League Crystal Palace. The good news is it's a home tie and we're 90 minutes away from another trip to Wembley. The bad news is we've got a few injury concerns heading into it, and that's even before we've kicked a ball at Huddersfield tomorrow night. The big names missing: Hal Robson-Kanu, Paul McShane and Matty Vidra, all going to miss tomorrow's game with Huddersfield. Brian McDermott did confirm to Tim Deller after the game that he's hopeful that all three will be fit, but at the moment there are severe question marks hanging over the three of them. Hal Robson-Kanu picked up an Achilles injury. You could see him holding it towards the end of the first half and was subbed at the break. And for Gareth McCleary against Fulham, Paul McShane, as we mentioned, didn't make the starting lineup, and Matty Vidra's been struggling. He hasn't featured since the last round, since we beat West Brom. He was taking part in the six-a-side game after proceedings finished against Fulham, and but again, Brian mentioning that none of them are going to play against Huddersfield, so it will very much be a case of wait and see. On the other end, Crystal Palace have got injury concerns of their own. Former Reading Academy product Connor Wickham has picked up a thigh injury, so it looks like he's missing, which is great news as far as Reading are concerned, because he had just rounded into form. He'd scored four in his last two Premier League games, so that'll be a bit of a relief for Jake Cooper and whoever partners him on Friday night. Also, problems in the goalkeeping department for Crystal Palace as well. Wayne Hennessy was injured ahead of the game. That let Alex McCarthy have a chance. And Johnny Alex McCarthy didn't exactly take that chance, did he?
No, he more presented the chance straight to Roberto Firmino. I mean, it was even more depressing, because the one standout match that I always remember from Alex McCarthy was, ironically, when he came in for injury to Adam Federici. And we played against Liverpool in our one season in the Premier League, 2012-13. And somehow it was 0-0. He made 10 or 12 ridiculous saves from the likes of Suarez, Coutinho, Sturridge. And, you know, that was probably one of the tapes that he sent out to scouts. Sort of said, come on, hire me. And, yeah, I mean, you hoped he could do the same against Liverpool, but it unfortunately just wasn't to be.
Yeah, horrible slip that he apologised to the Palace fans for afterwards. Ginis Baroni played for their under-21s today, so I don't know if that makes him any more or less likely to come in for McCarthy. Steve, you'd think Alan Pardew would want to give McCarthy another chance, especially in front of his old fans.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how... Can you just bring in a goalkeeper and then drop him straight away? That would surely shatter his confidence forever. Mm. And it is his former team. He might want to come back and make a point and prove, you know, look what you're missing type thing. But we all know what we're missing. We've got our flapsy.
So. Indeed. We've got a goalkeeper making his own mistakes in our goal, so...
Yeah, not the best. So
a high-scoring one, then.
Well, yeah. Let's hope so.
Just have a shot from 30 yards, see what happens.
Hope for a bit of drama anyway. So those are injury situations to monitor. We'll obviously keep you right up to date as we get close to the game. I'll hopefully be speaking to Charles Watts on the Podcast Extra on Friday to get the very latest team news. In the meantime, just one other major bit of news team-wise, and that is that young striker Ryan Lybird has gone out to Wickham on a month's loan. He went straight into the team for their League 2 clash with Newport. It couldn't help them win, unfortunately. Despite playing 90 minutes, they lost 1-0. Gozi Ugwu coming on in that game as well for Wickham, I noticed. So his career not gone brilliantly since leaving Reading.
Didn't he make all these noises when he was leaving, going, oh, I've got bigger things to do or something?
I think, but wasn't that Ikpeazu?
Oh, maybe. Who went to Watford. I know they both left Watford, at roughly the same time.
And yeah.
No, you know, everyone was going, oh, we've let two bright prospects go, but neither of them really done anything.
So. Yeah, it shows how difficult it is to make that transition from even being good at academy level to, you know, even getting into the Championship, yet alone being an established Championship player. So, yeah, best of luck to Rowan. He's had a fantastic start to his Reading career. I know he's not played a lot of first-team football, but he's done really well for the under-21s, coming from Billericay. So hopefully he's a bit
Which
of a...
Which is where, Steve?
Billericay in Ireland, yeah?
Yeah, in Ireland, is it?
How dare you bring up Steve's flub?
He brought it up himself.
Yeah, well...
Almost.
Yeah.
Geography is not my strong point.
Obviously not. Yes, if you did see our Facebook post around the signing, we did not sign him from Billericay in Ireland. That was Steve being a little bit forgetful. But we are an unprofessional joke of a website and podcast. So what do you expect from us? You know, we're not geography majors. None of us have a geography degree here, do we?
No.
No.
Especially not me.
I got geography as soon as I could. I did out to year nine.
Yeah, exactly the same.
Yeah.
There we go.
There we go. See? That's the sort of thing, you know, we give you the great historical knowledge, but it comes to saying where places are and pronouncing names correctly. You know, it's a sacrifice you have to make.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, and one final bit of news, Johnny, as far as the Tyler Stend is concerned.
Yep. As we briefly mentioned earlier, Hal Robson-Kanu won our Player of the Month for the second month in a row. This month he took 58% of the vote. I'm just going to check what he got last month as well. He got 45% of the vote. But the more impressive thing for me is that in the 13 games we played in January and February, he was voted Man of the Match by the fans 6 times out of 13 matches. So that just tells you how good he's been over the last 2 months. So yeah, you know, well deserved, I think, for Hal Robson-Kanu. When you really sort of narrow down how good he's been over the last few games, and you see in front of you what people have said about him, then it really puts it into perspective.
Absolutely, and richly deserved. You know, we've said it countless times now over the past few weeks. We've been very critical of him in the past, but all that criticism was based on the fact that we knew he had this potential, and he's finally showing it. And unfortunately for Reading, it looks like it's going to come in what is a pretty dead Championship season and the last few months of his Reading career. So, not the best. But then again, if he puts in an absolute storming performance against Crystal Palace and gets us to Wembley and then scores the winner in the semi-final, I think I'll be the first one to suggest building a statue of the bloke. So,
well, I think it's more likely if he's going to be player of the season, he'll score an own goal or something. I mean, that's
poor Adam.
That's Adam.
No, Adam was player of the season even before that moment. It wasn't just a sympathy thing.
No. Oh, well, we'll see how that one pans out. Still a couple of months to play for, and lots of votes to be won. So we'll see if someone else other than Hal can take an honour before the end of the season.
I feel a bit more justified in comparing him to Nick Blackman now. I don't know, Blackman left and I kind of compared him, saying he could step up to the mark, and I felt a bit risky at the time, and now I feel a bit more justified.
Quick shout out to Ian Wright on BBC 606 on Sunday night, who said, I think Reading will have a good chance against Crystal Palace. They're playing really well. And Nicky Blackman's doing well for them. I thought, well, Nicky Blackman doesn't play for Reading anymore, and he's certainly not playing well for Derby.
No, very much not. Maybe we've got some young academy prospect named Nicky Blackman sat away somewhere in like the under-17s or something.
Or like our second Moussa Dembele.
Yes.
Maybe that's why Tottenham want to sign him as well.
Yeah, or it could just be Wrighty not really paying too much attention to the Championship. But he's not here to defend himself.
It's below his pay grade. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to slag him off. He's not. But, you know, if you want to call into the show, Wrighty... we don't have a phone line, but you know,
and you don't have much of a Reading connection. But.
No, send us an MP3. In fact, I'll tell you the one really lame, pointless Ian Wright story. I remember seeing him play for Burnley against Reading. I think it might have even been his Burnley debut, way back when, in our early Div 1 days. But
could you tell that he was going to be something special?
I think he was. I could tell he was going to be something not long for the football pitch world. Based on that performance. But anyway, my memory might be a bit fuzzy. I think that was the best part of 15 years ago. So I will take that opportunity to move on. We have no pub chat again. Just sort of running dry on topics, really. We've sort of covered everything. If you have got suggestions, please send them in to us. We have had one for our Reading five-a-side team, but I might save that for another day. So in the meantime, let's delve in some pretty juicy topics in the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Right, thank you very much to everyone who has got in touch with us via at The Tarlhurst End on Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com, or has gone to the Facebook page at facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End. And we start with an email. It is from Tom, who in recent weeks we've been talking backwards and forwards over the role of the academy and the recruitment of younger players. We've put that to bed now and we're moving on. And Tom says, another bright week of work behind the scenes to consistently improve. I have to say, we made hard work of it on the pitch though. Harsh or not, we can't play direct football collectively at the moment. Ola John shows it week in, week out. Nobody really wants responsibility. I don't think that's an unfair point to make. Yes, Hector put some hard tackles in and got the crowd up. There isn't a total desire from all 11 on the pitch. We have individuals shining, but no real consensus. Jordan Obita just isn't what we need at the moment. Too concerned in turning in and looking back for an easy option rather than running and supplying the likes of Ola. We need Andrew Taylor back, as far as I'm concerned. Sadly, Jake Cooper looks too uneasy, almost like a newly born deer. He needs to become more confident with the ball at his feet. His balls are good, just needs to work on that and his strength and a composure when supplying a ball. Overall, we made the most of the second half, but not really pulling up trees in the first. Hal needs a contract. He's rebuilding his game, similar to how he was in 2011-12. McCleary being back is great, looks bright, just need Paul McShane back and fit. Missed him, unfortunately. Finally, seeing this afternoon more reports from interest for Aaron Call, it can only give him confidence. I can't see why he gets stick, especially getting called lightweight. He's messed around by Clark. He's finally getting his game back on track and solidly caps at under 21s. Take care, Tom. So there you go. Lots to chew over in that one, Ema.
I have a fair bit to disagree with, I'm afraid, Tom.
Here we go. Grab that popcorn.
Right. So first off, on a bitter, I think that's kind of harsh. I saw him make a number of runs beyond John. There were times in the first half particularly where John was kind of behind or bitter. And as we mentioned earlier, he was being doubled up on because John's not defending. Cooper, we've mentioned, he's not had the experience. So he's obviously, he might look a bit like a newborn deer, but that's kind of because in footballing terms, he is a newborn deer. And in terms of Aaron Call and the Arsenal link, I haven't seen him in the under 21s or anything, but I don't know how that, you know, what's that going to do, build his confidence? He's going to have to play games and play them well to build confidence. I'm not sure a random news article, you know, spurious rumours are going to make him go, oh great, I'm a great player now. I think there was one other right.
Well, yeah, with, if you haven't seen the Aaron Call rumour, head over to thetarlhurstend.com. You can read Steve's piece on it. He wrote up about the rumour. I think it was originally reported in the Metro. Call out of contract this summer, and Arsenal apparently monitoring him and want to take him on a free. Whether to believe that, I don't know, but we'll have to see how it goes. The other point I wanted to bring up from that email from Tom, Johnny, was that him saying McCleary being back is great and he looked bright. I don't think he showed very much of anything on Saturday.
No. No.
Simple as that. No.
That was my other point. That was the point I forgot to mention as well. He didn't look like he offered anything.
I mean, McCleary hasn't really shown that much in a while. And it's disappointing because, you know, a bit like how Robson Kanu, you have these memories of him bombing down the wing, putting in some really good crosses. I mean, you've got the obvious memory of April last year at Wembley, or some of us do. Sorry, low blow. McCleary, he has had some fantastic games for us in the past, but for whatever reason, it's just becoming too infrequent now. And I mean, he's another one that, you know, when his contract comes up in a year and he doesn't pick it up, it's going to be very difficult to decide whether to offer him a new contract. I mean, Tom makes the same point about how Robson Kanu. I mean, do you offer him a new contract at this stage? Because you know he's so inconsistent. He can have a bad year, then a good 2 months. It really is a difficult decision. And I don't think we're in the position right now where we could hold on to a type of player like that rather than, you know, just let them go and say, you know, take your inconsistency elsewhere.
I think Reading need to go back to, and it's been mentioned on the show before, Reading need to go back to signing players on the up. I don't think Hal Robson-Cadoo's on the up anymore. I think he's been there and done it. He's had a taste of Premier League football. He's playing regularly for Wales alongside Gareth Bale. Has he got that hunger to gut it out for another Championship season or two? I'm not convinced he does. As for McCleary, you're right. Since he picked up that back injury and the tail end of the 2013-14 season, he's not been the same. played a lot of football for Jamaica last summer as well, and I know that really annoyed Steve Clarke because he was playing through injuries, and really, you know, he's not picked up as well. You know, there were rumours going round of, you know, was there a falling out in the dressing room? You know, was there some other problem? Again, nothing's been said out in the open, but all I can judge is by his performances out on the pitch, and he's done nothing to show me why he was getting talked about for a Premier League move not so long ago.
And you can make the argument, obviously people will make the argument, that how can he show you anything when he's getting random 15 minute appearances, he's not starting games and all that kind of thing, but surely he'd be starting games if he was doing it on the training pitch. You know, McDermott would see that and give him a chance, but he's obviously not doing enough to justify starting, and so you have to kind of worry about that anyway, the fact that he's not doing well enough to start ahead of, you know, Quinn played on the left for a while, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that, got to agree. Again, it'll be interesting to see what happens as the league season winds down, and maybe if we do go out of the cup, who gets more game time. I could see McCleary getting more matches than Robson Kanu if it looks like Hal is off. It'll be really fascinating to see what McDermott does with the team full stop once he's got that sort of carte blanche to really turn the clock towards next season. And we're not too far away from that point whatsoever. I mean, if they lose against Huddersfield and get knocked out of the cup, I think we're there next week, because then they'll be 11 points away from the playoffs, comfortably clear of relegation and out of the cup. So you'll have no real reason to play players that aren't going to be there next season.
No.
And if you're playing youngsters, it would give the fans a reason to go to the game. You know, if you're turning up to a game full of low knees and past it, you know, there's not much motivation to go, whereas if you know that you're going to get a Tariq Fosu or whatever it is, however you pronounce his name, if you're going to get that, then that will entice you to the Majeski. So,
although Loney, Olajuwon and past it, Jan Kermagan are probably our two most
but Jan's here next season,
yeah,
though.
This is true.
So, you know, you can get invested in him, but it's very difficult to get invested and really get behind someone that you know is pretty much gone in the summer, like a Hal, like an Ola. I mean, Olajuwon gets you excited for the way he plays, but, and he made the point about bringing in Andrew Taylor, and again, why are you bringing in Andrew Taylor at this point of the season? You know, he's probably off in the summer, so again, unless it was for a one-off game, unless they were really worried about the threat of someone like a Balassi against Palace, I could understand that, but again, he's not played for weeks. So,
and he's not that quick. You know, he's not quicker than a bitter. He might be more defensively aware, but I think against Balassi, you need pace more than anything.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. As I said, we'll talk about the Crystal Palace game fairly shortly. Let's continue into the mailbag. George says, both at a similar stage of their career and ages, who would you prefer back in your Reading team, Mikael Antonio or Gylfi Sigurdsson?
Sigurdsson.
Yeah, Sigurdsson. No brainer for me.
I'm making a heart shape.
Antonio.
My heart is beating faster already. Just the mention of his name.
Swoon.
Scored 6 Premier League goals as well. I think both of them are amongst the highest Premier League goal scorers in 2016.
Yeah, Siggy suddenly found some form from somewhere. It's very good for them and him.
Yeah, I think it's easier. Okay, this is going to sound weird. Easier to find an Antonio style player than it is to find a Sigurdsson style player. And I think Sigurdsson's more valuable, I think, overall for a team. You can get pacey wingers who can chip in a goal from more places than you can get a Siggy.
Yep, I agree with that. And speaking of Mikael Antonio, we have an email in from Gavin. He says, gents, with Antonio being shortlisted for Premiership Player of the Month in February and overall having a massive impact in 2016 for West Ham, I really think it's worthy of a bit more of a post-mortem on how we've let a £12 million asset go for what was for £300,000 to Sheffield Wednesday. If any of you went on the pre-season tour to Portugal in 2011-12 when we went up to the Prem, do you agree that Mikael looked the sharpest of all our players and ended the previous season with promise? Having seen him develop in generally average Sheffield Wednesday and Forest teams, I for one am disappointed we've lost a player that would have been at both an asset in financial terms and as a real attacking threat. When you think we let him go for such a measly sum by Brian McDermott and the cash we subsequently outlay for the likes of Daniel Carriccio, etc., this has got to be up there as one of the biggest financial mistakes made under the Zingarevic era, along with the Pogrebniak deal. Wow. Well, first of all, I'll say I think he means the preseason tour during the summer, possibly before the Premier League season, maybe. Or it could have been the previous summer, actually. I can't say for sure. Also, I think the fee was around about 800,000 that we sold to Sheffield Wednesday, and we got a sizable chunk in the sell-on fee as well. Mm. So I think I'm right in saying we ended up making about £1.5 million. Still far, far short of 12 million, but I don't think it's quite that big of a financial disaster. But what do you think, Steve? What do you think of Gavin's points? Do you think it is one of the biggest mistakes we made in the Zingarevic era?
No, the biggest mistake in the Zingarevic era was allowing him to take over the club. No, I think you think immediacy, you think, okay, he's playing really well for West Ham, they're fighting for the Champions League, he's doing really well, why did we let him go? You could make the same argument for Charlie Austin and the like, but at the time, you know, we say it before, you had Mekanoff, you had Kebe, you had McCleary, you had a number of decent wingers that he was not going to get in ahead, you know, into the team ahead of. And, you know, at the time, it made sense to let him go because he wasn't going to get any game time. And if he didn't go out and get minutes and transfer to Forest and the like, then would he be the same player now? No, probably not.
Yeah, I think I'm going to put myself down as one of the only people who didn't see it coming from Mikel Antonio. There's been a surprising amount of people that have come out afterwards and sort of said, oh, I always knew Mikel Antonio was going to turn into this sort of player. You could see that the potential was there, but they don't always, you know, they don't always turn out like that. He could have gone either way at that point. I certainly didn't think one day he would be, you know, banging in goals for a team that's fifth in the Premier League. You can see it with a player like Sigurdsson. You can see it with a player like Long when they eventually get it together. But at the stage we let Antonio go, I don't think you could have said he was going to be a star winger for a Europa League, potentially a Champions League team. I think we did exactly the right thing by letting him go. You know, let him continue his career, let him get better, let him you know, advance his own career. And ultimately, you know, players are assets, but you've got to do the right thing by them as well. He had four wingers ahead of him, Kebe, Mekanoff, Hal Robson-Kanu and McCleary. You've got to do the right thing by him, let him advance. Maybe it was a mistake in retrospect, but I don't think it was a mistake at the time.
Yeah, I think if you go and try and make that decision again and you have exactly the same circumstances put in front of you, you know, you get the same outcome every time. You know, the sum adds up to what happened. It was a case of, like you said, he had people in front of him. He wanted to advance his career. Sheffield Wednesday is a place he's played on loan already. They wanted him, and there was just a deal to be done. So, I'm disappointed that we didn't get to see the best of him. But think of all those other clubs that, you know, the shoe's been on the other foot, and Reading have got the best out of them. You know, think of you know, a club that releases Brentford that lets Stephen Hunt go on a free and sees him turn into a £3.5 million Premier League player.
Kitson, Cambridge, 150k.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, Reading have done it to plenty of other teams. And like you say, it's a big selling point of this football club that they do right by their players. And you can't just stockpile talent, especially when you've got a budget as limited as Reading. And the chances are, if you just kept him sat on the bench, they wouldn't have even made 800 grand out of him. I didn't know how long he had left on his contract. I kind of think it would have been too much longer after that point. And as I said, they ended up with about £1.5 million from him, which, considering they signed him from Tooting for next to nothing, was a pretty decent bit of business. I'm glad he's doing so well. Fantastic to see him play, and to know that we've had a hand in his development, it's always satisfying when you see that it was Reading that gave him his chance in league football, and he's gone on to make good. But I don't think it was a financial mistake. And, you know, again, it wasn't at the we didn't sign Daniel Carriccio because we got rid of Mikel Antonio. They're exclusive. They're not the same thing. So thanks anyway for the email. Gavin has said, and hopefully maybe one day we'll see him back. Who knows? Who knows how football has a wacky way of...
Could be at the semi-final at Wembley.
Yeah, true. That'd be satisfying if he scores a hilarious own goal. One can dream. One can dream. Right.
I'd love to see him. Please score for us.
Yes. Robert asks, am I being harsh in thinking McCleary looks finished or just not that comfortable in McDermott's system? We sort of covered that one, really. Moving on to Will. He said, would you drop Cooper for Ferdinand for the Palace game if McShane is fit? Also, does Ollie Norwood need to be rested considering his form seems to be dipping? Now, this was another point brought up in Sim's further reading column. Bucks Rules, further reading column, should I say. Outing his not-secret identity there.
Gasp.
I know, considering he was in a live video with me on Facebook. His anonymity's well gone. That was one of his points. Ollie Norwood's dip in form, it's something that Charles Watts picked up on as well in his things he learnt from the game. Johnny, how concerned are you with Ollie's dip in form?
Not terribly. Yeah, he's playing more of a role that I don't think he's particularly suited to. Yeah, we've always seen that when he's in that quarterback role, just sort of sitting back between the two centre-backs, pinging a ball around, that's where he's most comfortable. He's not your sort of typical box-to-box midfielder. I think he struggles pretty much when he gets in the final third. Okay, he's hit the odd long shot, the odd free kick, but I don't think he's that type of player. He far prefers to sort of sit and control things from further back. So I don't think his form is dipping so much as he's just not right for the system at the moment, a bit like someone like Kermagant. And in terms of dropping Cooper Ferdinand, no. I mean, like we said with Alex McCarthy, if he gets dropped after one game, how's Cooper going to think if, sorry, Jake, you've been dropped because Anton Ferdinand's 10 years older than you?
Yeah, no. I agree. I think Ollie Norwood, he likes to play the regista role, as Perlo made famous. But unfortunately, at the moment, Hector's doing a better job than Norwood would be on current form and on recent form. And again, you think dropping Cooper, you could make an argument, but I'm not sure you'd want to go down that route. And you remember the game against Everton where he kind of had Lukaku in his back pocket. Adebayor is a similar type of player, and you think Cooper could, you know, he'd have a good fight against.
Yeah, he's not got the same pace threat that that really undoes Cooper. I mean, as we saw with Fredericks, that was who gave him a real tussle, and Sonogo's got a bit of pace about him as well. Gave him a bit of a run around. So, the slower the better as far as Jake's concerned.
Just going back to Michael Hector, was that the loudest tackle you've ever heard of Madstad? That absolutely crunching one he put in on a Fulham player in the middle of the park and just so cleanly won the ball and just charged us forward. It was one of those typical old school moments. You were just hoping the ref wasn't going to go, oh no, your studs were slightly up, I better call that a foul. Modern football, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, the referee wasn't great. As I said, we mentioned, he got in the way twice.
But for Reading's benefit both times.
Yeah, that is very true. Although the one for me was, I think the second time he got involved and he touched the ball, when the second a player went down, he blew for a free kick because he knew. I think Reading were just about to have a shot. And he's sort of like, oh God, I can't have a goal off the back of this. It would look awful for me. So, but he got away with it either way. So nothing too bad to worry about. And finishing the mailbag this week with Matt Castle. He says, I think you should get Ice Valley water from Macro. Much cheaper and better than Buxton. What do you reckon, guys? You've got more Buxton in front of you here.
Where's Ice Valley? At least Buxton is near Stoke, is it? Think.
Or
is it
just, again, is it just made
from the Peak District? No,
is it just made by Lewis Buxton or Jake Buxton?
It could be that, a side business.
Yeah. Anyway, that's us giving free plugs over. We'll consider a switch. If you're listening, Ice Valley Water or Buxton, please feel free to get in touch. We are open to having an official water sponsor.
Or Heineken or Carling. I mean, getting into, you know, other brands.
I think it would be dangerous if we had a Heineken sponsor with Westie and handbags on this show most of the time.
I think West Berkshire Brewery, you listening?
We would very quickly lose our family-friendly rating on iTunes if we had an alcohol sponsor. So we'll stick to water for the time being anyway. Maybe if we win the FA Cup, I'll break out a beer.
Not even a champagne.
No, a beer. Come on. Unprofessional joke for drinks. Back to football. What do you think is a realistic target for Reading next season? How long's a piece of string?
Yeah. Well, it depends how McDermott and co approach the summer. So you can only think there's three ways of doing it. You got one where they go for it depending on finances, you know, they sign a whole bunch of players properly this time, not on loan, and they really make a good go of it. Secondly, they try and do the youngsters things. You bring in the likes of Fosu, Samuel, Tish Waller, Cooper, Keown, you know, them kind of players, and kind of have a season of kind of gelling and kind of building something. Or you kind of go for the balanced approach of what we've kind of been doing for the past few seasons of selling players, buying players, kind of plodding along and hoping things kind of go together. But you think every one of those scenarios, the eventual aim will be playoffs. You know, even if we go for the youngster approach, they'd still be hoping to be at least mid-table with a view upwards.
Yeah, I agree with it. Everywhere that can't add any more. Johnny?
Yeah, I don't think this is a team that is one or two pieces away. It's, you know, especially with the players that are leaving this summer. I mean, having said that, you know, we were, what, top in October sort of time? We've beaten Middlesbrough and Burnley, so we've seen that we can, you know, get results against the best teams, but I don't think that this is... you know, this is the sort of team that is one or two or three players in away from a playoff charge or a promotion charge. Having said that, it'll come around to July and we'll all be thinking, yeah, we're going up.
Absolutely. There are so many moving parts this summer as well. We've got six loanees about to leave the club. We've got Hal Robson, Canoe and Anton Ferdinand out of contract as well. So that could be eight players gone straight away. So, and that's, you know, and these aren't just eight players that have been, you know, on the periphery. They've been players, except for Alex Fernandez.
Who?
Yeah, I know. Who have all been heavily involved this season. Poor Alex. As I tweeted earlier, someone brought up his name, and I'd honestly, genuinely forgotten that he was part of the football club. I just hadn't thought about him for weeks.
One positive of, you know, you mentioned earlier, one positive of if we don't have anything going for us and we kind of stop playing the loanies, means we don't have to see Piers on the pitch anymore.
Hmm. But then we can't sing.
Yeah, you can. Just sing the Ola John part.
The thing I like is that the fans always chant Ola, Ola, Ola John first. But that's when there's like a big noise around the ground anyway. Mm. So then the first one you hear is actually Pia, Pia, Pia's on. Doesn't really make much sense.
Inventive. You know that they're trying to We're inventive fans, aren't we?
Yeah. Oh, at least it's a song. It's a song and it's fairly original.
It's original, yeah. I like it.
I'm not going to criticise a song because I said it's original and it's actually a song and it's creating some noise, all of which are good things. And hopefully we're all singing it out. Look, again, I don't care if, you know, I've been slagging off Pearson all season, but if he pops up and scores the winner against Palace, I will go down and kiss the man's boots. I probably won't actually do that because I will be swiftly ejected and fined. But you know, if he wants to come to the next podcast recording and bring his boots, I will kiss them there. So there you go. I've laid down the challenge to Lucas Pearson.
Track me down.
Get us to Wembley, and I will kiss your boots. So there you go. Incentive.
Wow. If ever there was one.
Exactly. Right, before I make any more silly bets, gamble aware, should probably move on to any other business where we will preview that Crystal Palace game.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business.
So the big day is getting ever closer, just 5 days away from that massive FA Cup tie against Crystal Palace. But before we get there, we have to make a little trip up to Yorkshire to face struggling Huddersfield in the Championship. They are 18th in the table, 7 points from the bottom three, so not completely safe just yet. In their last 10, they've won 3, drawn 2 and lost 5, scoring 14 and conceding 12, although 5 of those goals did come in one win against Charlton. So they've not been in terrific goal-scoring form. But Steve, we've played Huddersfield 3 times already and we've had a pair of 2-2 draws and a 5-2 win. So this game's had goals in it this season.
And the way Reading are defending at the moment, you kind of expect goals to be scored again. And Naki Wells, he always scores against us, doesn't he? Or he always has a good game. So you've got to think we won't be keeping a clean sheet. Wells on the pitch.
And Johnny, Brian McDermott, obviously we've covered it already in Newsbite, saying that 3 first-teamers are definitely out and hinting at plenty more changes. Would you risk any? Are there any senior players you started against Fulham on Saturday that you want to see in that starting lineup again?
Well, I don't think it will be as much of a sea change as it was the last time we had to play an away game before an FA Cup quarterfinal, which was Watford.
Yeah.
Because you know that was Saturday, Monday, and this is Tuesday, Friday. Although a bit further to go, I think he'll name a pretty strong team. You know, the last thing you want. You know, even if you say, oh, you know, it's a secondary team and they lost, so it doesn't matter too much. I think he'll still name a pretty strong side. And I think McDermott will also go on to give that little bit of a carrot to these players who might be on the fringes, who, you know, someone like Raquel's or McCleary, just to say, look, if you play really well, give me a reason why I can't drop you for Friday night. So I think it'll be a good mix of players. Yeah, obviously you won't risk the players that are close to injury, but I think we'll see a little bit of change, but it certainly won't be a weak squad by any accounts.
Yeah, I don't see too much reason to change. Someone like, you know, Al Habsi can start, and maybe Cooper can start as well. Obviously you've got Jan Kermigan cup tied, so I can imagine he'll get a run out anyway. And we might see the likes of George Evans, Danny Williams has been starting. It's not going to be quite that sea change we saw against Watford last year, Steve, because I mean, the squad's a lot deeper. We've talked about a lot of players who've been on the fringes. It's actually a pretty good chance for them to stake a claim.
Yeah, and there are players that will be champing at the bit to have a chance, an opportunity, and you think McDermott would probably give a few of them a chance. You know, Raquel's, it'd be good to see if he got a start. George Evans, it'd be good to see a bit more of him. Maybe
another player I forgot we had.
Yeah. Maybe you give.
He's younger though. He's got an excuse. He didn't play for Real Madrid.
Yeah, that's true.
Not many people do. Actually, they kind of do.
He played for Man City. They're a big dog.
This is very true. Yeah, very true. Completely. We've
totally
killed the train of thought. Anyway.
Derailed, yeah.
Well, let's not spend too much time on this game. Anyway, as mentioned, Reading 11 points away from the playoffs at this point. Even though you know they do have a game in hand. It'd be great to win, just to give themselves a boost. And they've got a good chance. You look at the Huddersfield team, I said we've seen it plenty this season. They've got good players, but it's still a pretty average Championship side. So it's a game that's there for the taking. We very nearly won there in the Cup earlier this season, conceding a silly last minute. I think was it a penalty we conceded in the last minute to Naki Wells?
It probably was. Yeah. I was about to say, you can bet your house on it. Naki Wells is going to score.
Gamble
he
it.
Does. Patterson's got a good, I think, good record against as well, and Harry Bunn as well. You can read much more on Huddersfield on our View from the Town End column that will be up tomorrow morning as we record this, first thing Tuesday.
And can I just say, if someone is heading up to Huddersfield, you could pick us up a lovely bottle of Buxton on the way back, which is bottled in the Peak District.
Yeah, more importantly, if you're listening to this before the game, we are still on the hunt for someone to write a match report. For some bizarre reason, this game hasn't been very popular for Reading fans. Not a lot of keen to see a fairly pointless Championship game on a Tuesday night in Yorkshire. I don't know why.
To go to Brighton for £30.
£30.
Yeah, I know. Madness. So yeah, if you are going to Huddersfield, if you are one of the intrepid few making that trek, please get in touch with us. You can either tweet us to @thetarlestend or drop us an email. Very much appreciate you helping us out on this one so we can keep that streak going. I don't think we've missed a game this season, Johnny. So let's hope that doesn't come to an end against Huddersfield tomorrow. Mm. We might even throw in a bottle of Buxton for you.
We're not being paid, honest.
No, we're not. I wish we were. As I mentioned, if you happen to know Buxton. Right, anyway, let's move on to the main event. Friday, FA Cup quarterfinal, Medeski Stadium, live on the BBC. Crystal Palace coming to town. You couldn't really ask for a much better time to play Palace on paper. They've been miserable in 2016. They haven't won in the Premier League this calendar year. In all, it's 12 games that win. They got beat again at the weekend. As we mentioned, Alex McCarthy having a howler as they lost 2-1 at home to Liverpool. They have beaten three Premier League sides, though, on the way to the Cup sixth round. They've beaten Southampton, Stoke and Spurs. So they have got pedigree and were obviously in the top, you know, top five or six before that disastrous run. So Alan Pardew does know how to get that team playing, but as of late, they've been dire, Johnny.
They have, absolutely awful. And I think, you know, it has been such a season of shocks. And you think to the teams like, well, you know, Leicester, Palace, Watford and West Ham, who have really sort of challenged the big teams this season. And it's only really Leicester and West Ham that have kept it up. Both Watford and Crystal Palace have sort of been found out in recent weeks. I mean, there's obviously going to be the question about Pardew. How do you feel about him? You know, let bygones be bygones. It happened. You'd like with Steve Clarke, I think, if someone's offering you something, you'd go and have a chat, wouldn't you? But no, I mean, I think, you know, Alan Pardew is a good manager, and I think similar to what has happened with us this season and last season, players will always get themselves up for cup games. And so I think it will be a very different proposition to what team they'd be playing in the league. I'm glad this is at our place, not at their place, because I think they've got one of the best crowds in the Premier League. Very partisan, very loud, very intimidating ground at Selhurst Park. But you know, I think we've got just about enough momentum to get us through, hopefully.
Oh, I wish I had your confidence, Steve.
I don't know. It's on paper they have a number of very good players who, on, you know, even one of them, you know, you take Zaha for example, on his day he would rip us apart. But they, none of them have really been at their best recently, and it's, you know, they're going through the typical Pardew blip at the moment, and you wonder, can they get themselves up for this? You know, they, how do you get yourselves up for something after losing or not winning in 12, you know, I guess.
Yeah, you really hope the likes of Bolasie, likes of Zaha and Sakho just have a bad day at the office, because they've got some really frightening attacking options, and we saw what Moussa Dembele and Ross McCormack and even Sanogo did to our defence recently. You know, all those players I've just mentioned are much better in quality. Not to mention, you look across the pitch, it's easy to see why this team were in the top 10 of the Premier League. They've got quality all over the pitch, and on their day, they should beat Reading. But it's the Cup. Personally, I think we're going to lose simply because I'm destined never to go to Wembley, as mentioned earlier.
Happen.
Thank you, Johnny.
It'll happen.
It won't. No, I'm
like I said off air. You don't have two weddings in a year, but you can have two FA Cup semi-finals in the space of a year, just about.
Yeah. For that reason, I don't think it's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
I'm sticking.
Believe.
My pessimistic. I almost can't bear to watch this game. I know it's incredibly selfish of me in just saying this, but I feel like I've got more on the line than most Reading fans here because I missed out last year. And I'm going to big myself up for this. And it's for that reason I feel that I'm destined not to see this happen. I feel like the tease has just continued for a whole year now. I would have much rather have just said, get out in the third round and I wouldn't have had to think about it. But now it's dangling in front of me again and I can't handle it. I don't want to watch it, but I will be there. I will be there watching on. So let's put the money where the mouth is, although it doesn't count for the prediction league. You two both seem confident. What are your score predictions for the game?
That's a weird noise, wasn't it? I'm going to go...
Was that in Morse code?
Yeah. 3-2 to Palace. But like a last minute...
Heartbreak,
yeah.
Oh, great.
Enough Tony.
The tease continues. There you go. Yeah. Johnny?
I was going to go 3-2 Reading with Ibrahim Asonko netting a late header after a Leroy Leiter overhead kick.
Who's just joined Yeovil.
Yeah, he has. That didn't come up in news bites. Can't imagine why. No, I'll go for 3-2. Going to be high scoring, and I think it's going to be another thriller. Well, I say another thriller. A thriller.
Yeah, a damp squib for me. I think we'll lose 2-0. I think we'll go behind to an early-ish goal, huff and puff to get back in the game and get killed off late on. I just think it's just a step too far for this team. Would you make any changes? I mean, on the presumption that Vidra would come in for Kermigan, who's cup tied, would you otherwise keep the same team?
I think so. I think McDermott has got a team that is functional, and I think it's the sort of team that, because it's defensively, or it's set up defensively, I think it would do well to cope with Crystal Palace's threat. I think, you know, Johan Kabay will probably be man marked by Michael Hector, who will probably follow him all over the pitch, so he can't do anything. And I think at least if you've got a couple of outlets in Kanu and John, then you've got a chance on the break.
I was going to say that would be the one question I think a lot of fans will be asking themselves, is whether you start John, because we mentioned earlier he hasn't got much of a defensive aspect to his game, and do you risk playing John for the attacking outlet, or do you go for a more defensive awareness kind of Quinn type?
I think you've got to. I think you can't be totally dictated by your opposition. I think you've got to say, look, this is what we've got. You need to deal with him as much as we need to deal with him.
But would you start him?
Yeah.
Or would you bring him on early in the second half after you've seen how things are going? You know, because if it's 0-0 at halftime, you might go, okay, now you've got 45 minutes, go and
unleash.
Have a go.
Yeah, I'm more of the latter mindset. I would unleash him second half. I'd start with Quinn, maybe give Williams the start as well, and hope he can be a threat from deep, pushing forward, and just give Quinn that job out on the left alongside Obita, who's not the most defensively minded. I think you give him that cover, and then, yeah, you see how it's going after an hour. You know, if Reading are behind, or you think, okay, well, let's just give this a bit of a go, we'll bring him on. But... yeah, I don't know. It'll be very, very interesting to see. I don't envy Brian McDermott picking that team.
No. I'd like to be in his shoes right now. Not going to lie.
Yeah, you probably get paid pretty decently. Only get a free seat to every game. There you go. Nice, comfy, padded seat. So not an all bad job. Right. Just before we move on as well, Prediction League for Huddersfield. Johnny, just like to begrudgingly give you some credit. You correctly predicted that 2-2 draw with Fulham. Just claws back that lead on Charles Watts. Charles, top of the league on 26. You're now outright second on 21. I'm on 18, Westy on 16, and Dave stuck on 10. So given that you got it right last time around, I'll let you go first this time for the Huddersfield game.
3-1 Huddersfield.
Ooh. Yeah.
Do you think Bond might get a game?
No. No. I don't think there's any need.
Okay.
I don't think Habsy needs a rest.
There's no need, but I would like to see more of Bond.
See what we can do.
Yeah. He hasn't been given a fair crack by McDermott. At all, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And perhaps he couldn't keep hold of any of the balls on Saturday. So.
I can't remember if I gave a prediction on the podcast actually, but I'll change it anyway. I think we're going to draw 1-1. I'm going to have to go for a different result to try and claw back these points.
Yeah.
Because Charles...
That was my favourite.
Yeah, Charles has gone for a Huddersfield win. He went for a 2-1 home win. And Steve, a guest prediction from you?
2-0 Reading, confidence.
Wow, there you go.
Momentum, Palace, steamrolled. Even though
like
I said
it.
They'd lose.
Like it. Right, that does just about wrap up the show. As mentioned, please do check out that Joel Hufford interview that went up on Sunday. It was the first of a two-parter. The second part will be up on Thursday, the same day that I record with Archie Lovell. So if you do have questions for that show that you want to put to Archie, a man who played for Reading for, you know, best part of 6-7 years, came through the ranks here and has gone on for an interesting career off the pitch as well. He's currently working for the PFA up in Scotland. He was he had a good career there. He played for Australia. So lots of different things to talk about with Stuart. Very much looking forward to that. So email us into thetirelessland@gmail.com or on Twitter, use the hashtag TTE Ask Lovell, or just tweet us generally. You know, I'm not going to be fussy on this one. So yeah, please get those questions in and give that a download. I'll hopefully be back with Charles as well on the Podcast Extra on Friday, subject to any late wackiness or childbirth issues, given that Charles is expecting a second anytime soon. So that could derail Podcast Extra hopes. I think it's a little bit unfair to ask him to do a show from the delivery room, but we'll try. I'll certainly ask.
It'd certainly be some different noises in the background to the lift, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
the lift in the Get Reading offices.
Yeah, might have to put a parental guidance one on that show. But anyway, yeah, so stay tuned for that. As mentioned, plenty of great content up on thetirelessland.com at the moment. Go check out Bucks Royal's further reading column. I know the lads are at the under-21 game against Chelsea as well at the moment. They have promised to do some sort of video Q&A, although I think there might be technology issues getting in the way of that. We'll have to see how that pans out. I've left it in their hands for the time being. And also, just to say again, you may have noticed the Facebook videos we did in and around the game on Saturday with myself and Wim Senior and Bucks guesting at halftime. Let us know what you think of them. It's just something we're new trying out. We're always keen to give something new a go, see how it pans out. So if you liked it, great. If you didn't like it, you know, tell us. I mean, obviously, the face for radio that I have doesn't help, but we can do our best to improve the quality and change the cast. And John is just thrust in front of me the fact that Reading are losing 3-1 at the moment to Chelsea in that under-20 game. Is that full-time?
It's the 90th minute, so...
It's pretty much full-time. Yeah. So we'll end it on that sour note that they've got beat 3-1 at home. But yeah, stay tuned to thetirelessland.com. Lots of great content up there, as always, and you know the place to go. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me. I very, very much hope that when we reconvene next Monday that we are talking and planning our trip to Wembley.
We will be.
So you're just going to go watch Palace?
I'm more confident than I was last year.
Ooh.
Actually, incidentally, today as we record, is exactly a year to the day since we all got up at 6 a.m. to go to Bradford.
And on that absolute quagmire of a pitch.
And what a game that was.
That was a battle.
It really was a battle, wasn't it?
Yeah, not pretty. Stephen Kelly having a great game.
I don't think anyone had a great game.
No, I think he did. Anyway, we'll talk about that off air. Thank you very much again for hitting that download button. If you have supported us on the crowdfunding, and whichever way you listen, however you support us, that doesn't matter. Support the team on Friday, and I'm not going to say roar for the Royals, because that would be giving DJ Mega Party far too much credit.
Let's make some noise and back the boy.
Come on, you Ars. Get to Wembley. Prove me wrong. Go on, you Ars. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. It's funny how they always leave a trail. You smile, you smile. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. Funny how the team is on your trail. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. You smile, you smile. The crowds always leave a trail. Here's a smile.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
by Reading fans, for Reading fans.